Hi everyone, welcome back to the History Hive. It's been a bit of a minute. We've missed you very much. It's just me and Lara today, and we're going to be talking about Marjorie Kemp.
Yeah, he was actually a suggestion from Phoebe. So perhaps
This would have been
she
better
would
if
have
she was
been.
here.
Yeah, but we're going to try and do her justice still. And
Yeah.
I think actually, I had no idea who this woman was until Phoebe suggested it. So
Hey,
happy
it was
to
quite
have.
interesting to learn about
Yeah. Anyway, should we just get started? So Marjorie Kemp was thought to have been born around 1373. And we also know that she died also around 1440. Again, like vague dates, but we got a date, which is good.
her. No, I feel like that it's 73 makes it more weird. Like, it's not like if it was vague,
Yeah,
it
they haven't
was
just gone
around 30s.
1370s.
Yeah.
This is precise. Her father was a very well-known man in a town called Bishop's Lynn, which is now known as King's Lynn, and her father
Woo!
was
I love King's Lynn. Anytime I see King's Lynn, it makes me so happy because I always remember like that statistic that we had to learn when we studied it at eight.
yeah, so her dad was the mayor of King's Lynn, Bishop's Lynn,
Five-time mayor.
sorry.
He'd been
Sorry.
I read that he was the 5-time mayor of King's Lynn and the MP, I assume for Bishop's Lynn, and then also an alderman of the Holy Trinity Guild.
But yeah, she had like a wealthy merchant background.
Yeah, they were doing well for themselves. When she was 20, so we assume in about 1393, she married John Kemp, a burgess and chamberlain of Lynn, and a brewer. So he was from like a very, he was from like a similar class to her as well, like pretty wealthy. She was living a pretty comfortable lifestyle. And yeah.
Yeah, so like her father, John was also quite a respected man in the town. But actually, she kind of thought, I think she subtly thought that he wasn't quite as good as she could have gone for. Like, I think she thought he was a little bit below her ranking.
Ooh, reach for those stars.
and so, yeah, she's married to him and she gives birth to her first child. And suddenly, this, what people may. Okay, so people now may diagnose her with something like postpartum psychosis, something along those lines, but you have to kind of see it in the context of the time. And after the birth of her first child, she comes down with a lot of mental pain and she starts having these visions of Christ, but they're like really
Well,
vivid and they're.
she was plagued by like these like really terrifying visions of like demons and like almost the devil. Like I think she and everyone else thought she was possessed, and she had to be restrained in her bedchamber and like tied down because they were worried that she was going to hurt herself. Like that's how distressing these visions of demons were to begin with, and then she started seeing Christ.
She even describes that she has scars on her wrist from ripping at her flesh during these visions.
Apparently, when Christ first came to her, he stood at her bedside and he spoke to her and he said, "Daughter, why have you forsaken me? I never forsook you." Kind of deep.
A therapist would love to really explore that. But, you know, she actually ends up having around at least 14 pregnancies in her
Which is
lifetime.
so many.
Which is a few too many, in my opinion. You
Yeah.
do you.
When did she have the time? That's what I want to know. 13 more children after this first child, although it's not known how many survived, like past birth or to adulthood or any of that. But definitely a couple did. Eventually, she persuaded her husband that they should live a life of celibacy. I think we can tell that that didn't happen straight away.
But she has a business. And this begins after her first child, this begins to fail a bit. And this is another factor that pushes her deeper into religion. And through this, you know, the way she experiences religion is kind of, again, so intense. And she begins having these weeping spells where she just like is uncontrollably crying.
In
And she
that.
keeps seeing these visions. And this is when she's like, oh, I really want to live a chaste life. She
Yeah.
wants to turn to piety.
Yeah, after this first vision, she dedicated herself to Christ, and obviously, as Lara said, she went deeper and deeper into it throughout the years. But she started by just spending most of her time praying in St. Margaret's Chapel. She also wore a hair shirt underneath her clothes and fasted on bread and water. And then she kind of moved on to like pilgrimages and going to visit holy shrines, and she and trying to educate herself in God's message and stuff like that. I actually think it's kind of cool.
She
She went
went to
to
find
find herself.
herself. She found herself in Jerusalem. As Katie said at the beginning, she was actually having not visions of just Christ, but also she was really worried at the beginning that these visions were sent by demons rather than God. And so this meant along her pilgrimages, she had stop-ins with a lot of big religious figures, such as Julian of Norwich.
Sick name.
Sick name.
So she visited Julian of Norwich in 1413 to seek guidance and reassurance that like she was on the right path and things like that, and that these visions and stuff like that. And Julian confirmed that Marjorie's visions came from God, and that her tears from her uncontrollable bouts of weeping were physical evidence of the Holy Spirit in her soul. I mean, next time I start crying, I'm big. The Holy Spirit's.
There were also concerns from the church that she was a Lollard, which was basically a very early form of extreme Protestantism. But she argues her case again and again, going that she wasn't a Lollard. She was just very pious, very into Christianity.
Yeah. I feel like they like people just wanted to be haters.
Exactly. People
They
love to
just
hate.
The haters gonna hate. They were just like, they were probably just mad that they weren't her on her level.
I think they probably were. She was so committed to the cause, and they just couldn't get
The
that
Holy
far.
Spirit was inside her. She was having visions where she spoke to Jesus. Like, sorry, they're so jealous.
In this society where like religion is everything, yeah, I'd be jealous if some woman next to me was like, the Holy Spirit's inside me. I'd be like, why isn't it inside me?
And she just started weeping, and she was like, "These tears are from the Holy Spirit." I'd be like, "What's a girl gonna do to get the Holy Spirit inside?"
Yeah. Yeah, of course they'd label her a Lollard. They all like to hate on a successful woman.
Literally, no one wants to see a successful woman.
Exactly.
Biggest. That's like also like for someone who was so pious and so committed to Catholicism as she was, that's like the biggest insult you could throw at her. Be like, "Lollard."
Yeah. Anyway, in 1414, as we said, this is when she starts a series of pilgrimages, and she goes to many places. Her longest pilgrimage is one to Jerusalem, and she has a very long stopover in Rome. But while she's on this travel, she really finds a pattern, and with all the places she goes to, that her fellow travelers were getting really annoyed at her for basically crying all the time. But she was being really accepted by the poorer people in all the places that she was traveling to.
Uncontrollable bawling her eyes out, and together with her roaring in a church, she really selected. I know. She really kind of created this like fame around her as a mystic.
And
And
she would wear all white, so she was very recognizable to the people of Europe.
the issue is that the more famous that you get, we've seen this happen throughout history as well as the modern day. When people are loved, it spawns haters because no one could ever be happy for someone. But I genuinely think that that's part of the reason she had haters, because like when people get like famous or like well known for something that like you want to do, or you're like, I could do that, or like you're like, I also believe in God, why am I not famous? I think that's genuinely like the core of why people, some of these people hated her, because they're like, well, I could go on
Exactly.
this. But this kind of the polarization that she created was even clear within her little town that she came from. There was constant conflict.
After these pilgrimages, she makes her way back to England. And when she's in England, she travels up to the north of England. And this is where many times she is arrested for heresy. And actually, she is even nearly burned at the stake. But she wasn't. And throughout this, as we've seen
She
before,
was
she's
imprisoned
very
in
firm.
Leicester.
She's very firm in her defense that her views aren't heretical. She's just religious, which is the pattern. And you know what? To be able, as a woman at this time, to be able to persuade people when they're fully pitted against you, that actually you're just living your life.
After this, she returned to Lynn, and lived a very spiritual life there, filled with visions and conversations with Christ and lots of weeping.
Some of these visions, it was even said that she sees Christ in such an intense way that it almost became sexual. And she would often see herself as a servant to Mary or Jesus.
Basically, her husband tried to stay out of it and all her religious stuff, but he then suffered an in a really bad injury, and she tried to nurse him back to health until his eventual death, after which she upped sticks with her daughter and traveled to Germany. She was almost 60 at the time, which, let's deep, that's really old for these times. Like, sorry, when Elizabeth, like, when, but like 200, more than 200 years later, when Elizabeth reached 60, everyone was like, when is she going to kick the bucket? Like, 60 is really, really old. People were probably like, how has this woman not kicked the bucket? Like,
Yeah, must be all that walking.
and she went to go see the Holy Blood in Brandenburg and the relics in Aachen. And the last record we have of her is 1438.
Yeah, and as like the defining feature of Marjorie Kemp, and the reason we know all this about her, is because she created what is often seen as the oldest example of an autobiography in the English language.
I think it's the oldest surviving one. Like, it's the oldest one we know of. The first one. Trendsetter.
Trailblazer. She named her book The Book of Marjorie Kemp. She should.
Yeah.
And obviously, because she was illiterate at the time, it was dictated to two clerks between 1432 and 1436. But then the kind of the modern version that we have was first published in 1936.
Yes. Some scholars believe that the copy we have now is not the original copy, but was made a little later than the original, perhaps under the author's supervision as well. But yeah, it's just a fun little fact for you, I guess. Now, I may have completely misunderstood the point that Phoebe wanted us to go for. I think she's very cool. She was both, I think she was ahead of her time. A bit, I would go as far as to argue, a bit of a feminist icon.
I would as well. And you know what, Phoebe, if you disagree with this, you can take to the Instagram and voice your disagreement.
Yeah,
But
please do.
in our opinion, she
Speaking
was
of,
misunderstood.
you should
People
follow
love to
the
hate.
Instagram.
You should follow the Instagram. Yeah, I think it was a man who had gotten really into religion, he would have been really praised, and because it's a woman, they are gonna try and label her as hysterical, as weeping, as emotional.
But I do think it's kind of cool that like a religious guy was like, no, these are like, this shows how
Yeah.
close you are with God. You know, I think that's kind of cool.
And I think it's easy to look at it from modern eyes and go, oh, this is all a bit ridiculous. But at the time, religion is like the thing that binds society. Religion is the main thing that people live for. So to be really into it,
Literally took you from cradle to grave.
we thank you all for listening. We hope you have a nice fortnight, and we'll see you next time on the History Hive.